So my name is Herkko Hietanen. I'm a lawyer. I'm an economist. I'm a software developer. I'm a designer as well. So I practiced law as a startup lawyer working with the tech industry. And quite soon I also started my PhD work after getting my master's degree in law. And I got my PhD degree in economics, and law and economics was my field of studies. And I've been always interested about transaction economics, the idea that while we're making transactions, there's always a price to pay. Often is might be a license price or a price for a product, but there's also another price to pay, which is the lawyer's costs, the transaction costs. And so it's about finding the right people, making contracts with them, enforcing those contracts. And with the digital age, all that can be reduced dramatically. So I've been interested in looking at the cost of lawyering and how digital world can change that.
What do you do here today?
We serve the tech industry. A lot of our clients are software producers. They produce either products or they sell services to companies that produce digital things. And that's majority of our business today. However, we also produce software for our clients as well. So some of our clients, for example, we're currently working with Senaatti Kiinteistö, which is the basically state who owns the real estate. So they have to collect the information and share it with buyers, and we've been supporting them in the process. Because if you think about it, a lot of legal processes are about information. They are about information gathering, they're about information sharing, and they are about transferring that information from one authority to another. So IT is perfect for that. So we design those processes, make them as user-friendly as possible, and then we also implement the software. So we have a software developer team, and we have lawyers who design the software, and we also have lawyers who can code. I'm one of those, and we have another lawyer who has a second degree in computer science. So we design and we implement software that can help in the legal processes.
What kind of legal work is it mainly you help them with? Is it normal, or is it special technology legal work?
Well, we help growth companies. We help them to comply with rules. So if you think about hiring people, there's all sort of legal requirements that employers are required to take. Making employment agreements, agreeing on IPR issues, and hiring, firing, managing the company, it takes a lot of legal work, and that's something that we have also automated a lot. So our own system enables us to create about 120 different kind of documents, both in Finnish and in English, and so we collect our clients' information on our production platform, and then we enable the companies to actually create documents, which are, it could be like incentive program where company employees are given stock options, for example. It includes like 15 different kind of documents, which are kind of similar every time. We're talking about legal procedures and with a repetitive work. So we've produced a system where those processes are supported internally, and so we can concentrate on the human kind of touch, describing what's going on and making the changes, tailoring the documents for each company. But that has enabled us also to understand the price of this kind of major restructuring of companies, for example, because we know how much time it takes us, and we can build products. That's something that we also concentrate heavily. So, for example, a regular Finnish company, they are individual needs of clients as well.
Before you started in the US, were you interested in technical things already?
Yeah, so I got kind of lucky early on in the law school. I got a job in a technical university in the Helsinki Institute for Information Technology, and we were doing a lot of tech research, and it was like multidisciplinary teams. Although it was an IT institute, there were about half a dozen lawyers working there, and the digital questions were starting to rise. This was early 2000. I think it was 2001 when I joined there, and we were looking at all sort of interesting stuff, like open source was coming up. It was still very academic, and I remember we were participating in interesting conferences. Steve Ballmer was there talking, and he was like, Microsoft is never gonna be open source, and hell will freeze over before Microsoft will foster open source. And what do we have today? We have Microsoft, one of the biggest contributors of open source software, and they bought the biggest repository for open source, GitHub, a week ago, and so
they
a lot of things have changed.
Did they buy that?
I think they bought it. At least it was circulated that they made a bit and
interested in it.
Yeah.
But then when you told me that you worked at this friend's firm later when you came back.
Yes.
Was it as a lawyer there?
Yeah. Well, they hired me as a HR director there.
Uh-huh, okay.
When I joined, I had to first look up what HR actually means. I didn't know. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll take the job. I was also managing the legal side of the business, but the HR and legal were my responsibilities. So I worked as an in-house counsel there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are those your former like projects then in this area, like automating bureaucracies?
Yeah. So part of the HR director's job was that I had to manage also the training of the staff. So in IT business, you can't stand still and you have to constantly learn. So I reviewed a lot of services where you can learn coding, learn design. Coding, software development, only small part is coding. So it's user experience design, architecture design, graphical design, and a lot of user requirement engineering, for example. Those are things that software developers have to learn, and there's really good resources for that. So I started coding myself at that point and started looking some of the processes I was dealing daily and figuring out, can we automate? This was a company who was automating or building digital services for our clients, and people were really interested about it. So I think the bug kind of was attached to me when I was working there. I wanted to learn as well. So that was my path. Mm-hmm. The IT company was my path to software development and automation as well. And that's kind of what started it.
And have you been successful, or do you have had some failures also on the way? Or
I studied like crazy at first, and I thought I was getting good at it, it's an interesting thing when you don't know much about certain topics, you think you're really good at it, and once you learn more and more, you start to understand that there's so much more to learn and that you're not really good at it before you do years of work with that. But it enabled me to test things. We failed miserably once we offered prenup agreements. So we had a form where it's rather simple process actually doing prenup agreements. So I I coded a software which collected information needed for prenup agreements, and we put it online, and we realized that nobody was buying it, so we had to find the audience, the clients, and so we went to a wedding fair. One of our clients was developing robots. So they had a talking robot, which we lent. So we had on our stand a talking robot. He could, the robot could only talk in English, and it was telling lawyer jokes, bad lawyer jokes in English, shouting at people, and people would actually run away from the robot and not come and talk to us about prenup agreements. So we had to turn it off. We also got complaints from our neighboring booths for the robot, and but we managed to get like 700 contact information, so we knew about every wedding in Finland that summer, and we contacted those people, but turns out that it's really not an interesting audience because you have to capture them. People only get married once, yeah, generally, so and you have to capture them while they are thinking about prenup agreements, and it was also kind of hard to talk about money to people who are in love or who are thinking about what kind of wedding cake do you want. So it was a difficult market, so we decided to drop that. We tested with other family law options. We went invested heavily into, we had a service where you could report the death estate assets and debts and create like perukirja, which is the it's like kind of like a tax report after deceased, and we tried to automate that. We tried to provide in a structural form the information to the tax authorities. Turns out that they weren't quite ready for it. They didn't understand why anybody would like to provide that information for them. So there was, we're talking about 50,000 documents which are provided in a paper form today, and there's a person in the tax office putting the information, collecting the information from those paper documents into the tax system, the IT system, and it would have saved tremendously amount of money to have this in a digital form. But
so it was a good idea that didn't really start off.
Yeah, the time wasn't quite ready. So it's not only if you think about developing software or services like this that you can get information from government or from other services. It's also a question of can you provide, do they have ability to accept it from you as well? And
well, in Sweden it's like this, that the tax authority now is so good at AI and all this, that they say that they can do things that they don't want to do for ethical reasons yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they have developed very good there. I don't know how, maybe today Finnish tax authorities are also more developed than in those days, I guess.
Yeah, well, Finnish tax authority and I think Swedish tax authorities are, I mean, one of the best ones in the world.
Oh, they are there,
If you compare it to American system or, well, American financial system is terrible anyway.
But, and bureaucracy.
Yeah. So we're among the best, and but government is starting to learn. If you look at the real estate systems, for example, in Finland, they wanted to support electronic real estate deals, which would be registered to the land registry, and they created their own system first, digital website where you can do deals. However, nobody was using it. So what they decided to do is not keep pushing that website, but they actually created a API, application interface, where you could provide deals in a structural form from your own platform. So, and it enabled a creation of like your own UI, your own UX, user experience, your own, with your own services. So connecting to that service is now considerably easier.
And is it for real estate dealers or is it for
people? Well, I know this because we're working with Senaatti.
Oh, okay.
So the idea is that they can create their own real estate deals in their own systems. Mm. And if they do massive amount of this, it could be used by banks, it could be used by municipality, and cities who do a lot of these deals.
So it's
probably not for private individuals. It's however they would get service from the real estate agents, I guess.
Or the bank or something. But it's really fun to talk to you. And if you just think, give some thoughts about the development of legal tech and the use of it today and in the future, how you see it. Is it a revolution right now, or is it just moving forward slowly or something like this?
No, I think it's going to catch on eventually. It has had some starting problems. We have problems which cannot be solved with traditional measures. Like, for example, we have the refugee problem. And it's a security problem, but it's also a legal problem, because it's the lawyers, it's the courts who have to deal with whether somebody can stay or not. They get appealed to courts, and there we have also a language problem.
So you mean that as a barrier for new technology that could help us make it more efficient?
Yes. I think we could serve people who would... It would be tremendously costly to serve otherwise, like the refugees who don't speak the language, who speak six different languages, but they still have the smartphones. So we can provide with the legal tech the services in their own language, make sure that that information is translated in the process to the courts. The information is provided in a way that makes it easier for courts to write the decisions, concentrate on writing the, looking at the individual things that the client or the person who is making the appeal has in their case, and it also improves the efficiency in the process. So we can have better decisions, we can have create them faster, and we have more satisfied clients, both the refugees in this case and the judges, who can concentrate on their work. So I think it has a tremendously power and solving big problems that we're facing today that otherwise wouldn't get solved.
So, but this some people discuss also about the access to justice. Do you think also that that area is going to be improved, so to say? Could it be?
I think I work with students. We had a legal tech labs hackathon, and
You were in that.
I was a judge or a mentor or whatever in it, and I keep hearing the idea that we have this revolutionary idea, the service that's gonna make lawyers obsolete. You're not gonna need lawyers in the future, and I disagree strongly with that. Nobody's gonna fund that. Firstly, at least from the legal sector, it's better to find services of that where people are not served today. For example, good example is the parking ticket.
Or
one very successful legal tech sector is appealing or complaining about delayed flights. That's a multi-million dollar or euro business. But I have my own experience. We were working with a case where a Finnish tire manufacturer was caught cheating in the tests. So they were delivering different tires to the tire tests and getting really good reviews there. And they actually acknowledged that this has been going on for years. And and they said that we're not gonna pay to the people who bought the tires because they thought that they were winning in the tests. And that sounded kind of unfair. We're talking about companies who like to talk about that they're responsible companies and they're part of the society. And here we got a company which is saying that, no, we got caught lying and we're not going to do anything about it. Too bad. So what we did, we made a website where people who bought the tires could go in, bring their receipt, and join kind of like a class action suit.
And, on the website.
On the website, and demand like 20% discount for the tires, because that's something that if you're a winner in a test, tire test, then you can charge extra money.
Yeah, of course.
And
yeah.
It's the consumer who's paying for that. And we combined, we had, during the first week, we had, 300 people sending in their receipts. And if we've met with these people, it would have taken 300 hours probably. Mm-hmm. And with the technology, it enabled us to never meet these clients, get the necessary paperwork, to communicate through emails, asking special questions about what were the special circumstances around, wow, what made them buy the tires. And so we could create demands which were individually tailored to every buyer's needs. Fantastic. And approach the tire company. And the tire company was totally not ready for it.
So even if they acknowledged they did the wrong thing, but they...
Yeah, we wanted to combine those into one file, deliver it to the tire company, but the tire company thought that we're small player and they wanted to bury us in the work, so they wanted each one demand in a separate letter. And so it was not a problem for us because we had it in digital form, so we started sending them once per hour, so we had 400 emails going in every hour. And after 2 or 3 days the lawyer from the opposing side got upset, and that but it was something that they requested. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to see this kind of information balance issues from companies who are using the legal tech in the future when they are dealing with companies who are not using it. So even if you decided as a law firm or as a... I mean, this got escalated into the... consumer protection
authorities
who are looking at the issue now. And it's like 50% of the cases that year were about these Nokia tires cases. So it was even difficult for them to deal with it. Mm. So when these kind of new legal problems are being solved with legal technology, all the parties should actually start preparing for that. Mm.
So, but were you as a firm then responsible for this website? So
yes, we set up the website. And
well, in the future, do you see this as an improvement of the legal field instead?
Yeah, I think we're gonna lose like the boring jobs to the computers, and I'm not worried about it. We're gonna have. I mean, the legislator has been so busy drafting new laws, and it's getting worse and worse every year. So lawyers are still needed. The repetitive works where people make mistakes, they're gonna be outsourced to computers, the artificial intelligence, and the legal tech plays a crucial role in that. Mm. But we're not gonna lose the lawyers. Mm. Too bad. I'm sorry if your end goal. But I think lawyers are still going to exist. But I mean, different sectors are going to be hit. Mm. Many of the simplest form-filling kind of lawyer working is going to disappear. But it's going to mean also that lawyers can concentrate on the advice part.
But you told me before you program. Do you do programming? So first of all, how did you study that on side of your work in the evenings or whatever? I mean,
there's video courses that have exercises online. So I started doing them myself just to review what's out there, what's good and what's not. And then I got hooked, and then I started really doing them. Okay. I mean, I I spent after work probably 6-7 hours studying that for a year.
Online courses and
yeah.
such. Okay.
Yeah.
But did you read books too, or did you just?
No, I did mostly online courses. I used a service called Treehouse, which was it had content meant for totally beginners, starting from the very, very like low level kind of stuff, and then I've since progress to other online courses which are meant for professionals now and I mean the tools that are available for software developers, it's just amazing. If you think about software developers, they can develop their own tools, they have the means of doing that. When you compare the tools that are available to lawyers nowadays, it's just amazing. So that kind of opened my eyes also that we can do so much better in a legal world if we could produce our own tools. And that's something that I've worked ever since, and I've hired lawyers who can do the development, but I also realized quite soon that in order to do like really high quality software, you have to have software developers who are professionals in that.
But how did you find those developers? Was it hard to find them? Or?
Yeah, it's hard to find. Well, I worked in a industry where my job was finding software developers. I hired 70 people during 2 years.
So you had the connections, of course.
So I had the connections, and I also worked with some very talented students. I had a connection with the university, so I could find, especially foreign students or foreign developers may have difficulty finding jobs in Finland.
Okay.
A lot of software is still developed in Finnish. So documentation is in Finnish and software comments are in Finnish. That's a really good place to look if you, but it also means that you have to have processes in English so that you can support this kind of multi-talented and multi-language teams as well. So currently we have, you know, software developers from Holland and from Russia working for us.
Okay. But what would you say is the greatest benefit for you that you studied programming and coding today? I mean, what's your benefit for this knowledge that you have, do you think?
Yeah, the beauty, I thought about, I mean, constantly you hear that should lawyers know how to code, and how much knowledge should they have about it? And we have IT lawyers who haven't wrote one line of code, and they are doing okay in their work, but they are kind of like they have a theoretical knowledge of how things work, and that's partly why we have so bad contracts in the IT sector as well, because it's the commercial people, it's the lawyers who draft those, and software developers, there's a gap between the contracts and the real world there. Like, for example, if you haven't written a single test to your software, you don't understand what the testing, how important it is for a high quality software and the testing processes. So it's not just software development, it has so many sectors, so the writing code is just a very minor part of it. The idea that lawyers be able to write software, yes. Should they understand more about software development? Totally. Is it really important to understand more about other sectors or the whole picture of how? It's kind of like the question asking that, should a real estate lawyer understand how to lay brick walls? No, totally not. Should they understand what's the, how architecture work, how structural engineering work, why are they used when you are building a house? Or city planning, the idea of you don't build like a 15-story parking garage in the middle of the city, for example. So, but it's software, just coding is just so small part of it.
Mm.
However, if you're developing software, if you're developing services,
mm.
and you're working with a software team, it's always good if you can code so that you don't have to go to a software developer and say that, okay, I want this label change or
mm.
make it like this.
Mm.
But rather you can go into the code and fix it yourself,
mm.
understand what's going on in the code,
mm.
and participate as a team member and not like a manager.
Mm.
So that has played a big role.
As you have chosen also to develop your own tools and tools for others also, so
yeah.
I guess it's a big benefit for you then.
Yeah, and it's also rarely in a legal tech are problems like technical.
Mm.
So it's rarely that the team says that this cannot be done.
Mm.
If you can do your own development, you can say, and the technical team says that no, this can't be done, you can say that of course it can be done. Do it like this. I'm not gonna do it, but you can do it. Find solutions and then you're like part of the team. You're not an outsider.
Mm. And you know what's possible.
You're an expert in this mm. area. You are not just the person who's doing the dirty work,
mm.
but you can design it and you can have a level conversation with your peers. You're not like an outsider who's relying on their expertise.
I see. Mm-hmm. So, but great. It's so nice to talk to you, Herk, and very interesting. And we could talk a long time,
mm.
but I thought of finishing up here. And just ask you if you want to tell the listeners if they want to contact you or about your company, look more about it or so. So how they find you and that.
So we're online at turre.com, turre.com.
Mm.
And currently we have only a Finnish page, but this summer we're turning into English page. We're mm-hmm. serving a lot of clients in Scandinavia and in the mm-hmm. US, and
okay.
So our services are available, software services and the legal services are available in English and in Finnish. And
after the summer then, because probably
yeah.
this will be now in the fall when we're
yeah.
When they hear this,
right. So and if you have projects that could benefit from legal tech or legal design, I'm always interested in talking. And and for students, we offer also trainee positions,
mm-hmm.
and we're working with universities in producing master's theses. And
mm-hmm. okay, which university mainly is it that you?
We work with University of Helsinki, which has a legal tech lab.
Shout
out to them and
yeah.
all the university here in the Helsinki area,
mm.
Finland.
Both those. Mm. Mm. And your email, I guess, or
yeah. So my name, you can look me up
at the website.
Yeah,
mm.
My name is Herkko Hietanen. It's been really nice talking with you.
The same. Thank you. Great.